Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and in a few moments I'll be sharing insights surrounding a legendary Austrian cardinal, speaking to the rector of the Benedict XVI Pontifical Academy at Heiligenkreuz, interviewing a parish priest in Vienna, and telling you what the shrine at Mariazell means at a personal level to Austrian National Director of the Pontifical Missionary Societies, Leo Masberg. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. I'm just back from Austria, where I went to report on Pope Benedict XVI's seventh pastoral journey abroad, his only European visit this year, a pastoral pilgrimage which took him on Saturday to the Marian Shrine at Mariazell, 90 miles south of Vienna, which also happens to be the most popular Marian Shrine in the whole of Central Europe. And as you heard a moment ago, it's precisely this pilgrimage that I wish to focus on today, beginning with a curious incident which took place during the very last event on the Pope's agenda on Sunday evening. It happened during a meeting Pope Benedict had with representatives from Austrian volunteer groups, Christians and non-Christians alike, in Vienna's concert house. An incident related to Austria's president, Heinz Fischer, who was there to welcome the Pope. What happened was that when he mentioned the current Archbishop of Vienna, who, as we know, is Cardinal Christoph Schönborn, he made a mistake and said instead His Eminence Cardinal König. Let's listen.
Dafür darf ich mich im Einvernehmen mit seiner Eminenz Kardinal Dr. König sehr herzlich bedanken. Bitte um Entschuldigung.
As you heard, the mistake was made, but he received a standing ovation for this slip of tongue, simply because to Austrians, Cardinal Franz König, who died in 2004, is a legendary figure, who pioneered, among other things, the East-West dialogue at the time an iron curtain was still drawn right across Europe. While in Vienna, I met up with someone who worked closely with him for 25 years. She's tablet correspondent there, Christa Pongratz-Lippitt. I did so, as one does in Vienna, in a coffee house, in case you're wondering about the background sound. He was a pioneer of East-West dialogue, would you say that?
Yes, quite definitely. He had a very bad car accident in 1960 in what was Yugoslavia, and when he woke up in his hospital bed, he said he thought God must have meant something. I mean, he should be reading something into the significance of this accident. And he said, I suddenly thought that it was my duty as Archbishop of Vienna, as we were the closest archdiocese to the Iron Curtain, to be a bridgehead, a real bridgehead, and to make Vienna a bridgehead to the persecuted Catholics behind the Iron Curtain. And that's how it started. After the Second Vatican Council, or even in the middle of it, he very soon, Pope John the 23rd, asked him to go and visit Cardinal Mincenti, who was at that time under house arrest in the, couldn't leave the U.S. Embassy. He'd been in prison for a long time, and then he was let out, but he couldn't leave the U.S. Embassy. And Cardinal König said, very surprised, to Pope John, well, I mean, how do I get to Budapest? There's the Iron Curtain. And Pope John smilingly said, oh, that'll be it. Just go to the station, get yourself a ticket. And König said later it wasn't quite as easy. He needed all sorts of help from the Vatican and the Austrian Foreign Office, but he managed to drive there, and he interviewed Cardinal Mincenti, and he went on visiting him for 11 years and eventually got him out under Paul VI. After Budapest, he was one of the first, I think in 1964, cardinals to visit Romania, and was able to get the then head of the Catholic Church there freed from house arrest because he spoke to the authorities and they listened to him, and he was freed and was able to go and carry on with his pastoral work. And König from then on visited all the countries behind the Iron Curtain as often as he could and helped them both with finances from Austria, but also, as he always said pastorally, with comforting them, because they thought that the West had given them up. And he found that even the few people that were still openly going to church in these countries had great, they found it a great solace that someone would bother a cardinal to come over and talk to them. And that was his big mission in life. He founded Pro Oriente in the 60s, which is still a foundation to support him in this work and to take up work with first the Iron Curtain countries. Now it still exists and does a lot with Islam and so on. So he was always the cardinal who traveled to Eastern Europe and was very much in favor of reuniting Europe after the fall of the Iron Curtain. He also knew that the countries behind the Iron Curtain knew little or not enough about the council, and so he saw to it that they got enough money to translate, or he went over himself to teach about the council declarations and so on, so that it became more well known, especially to the parish priests there in the Czech Republic and in Eastern Germany and so on.
Has the Catholic Church in Austria picked up this legacy at all today in post-communist Eastern Europe?
Things have changed greatly. I think the policy immediately after the Iron Curtain, Cardinal Koenig always said the danger was that the Western Church moved in and felt rather superior and rather talked down at them, which they didn't like at all. It was also, of course, the church behind the Iron Curtain didn't know very much about the council and were rather horrified about some of the developments, because they could still remember the pre-conciliar church, and it came on them rather suddenly, and so they grew a little anti-West, and the West took this badly and grew a little anti-East because it was disappointed. I mean, you know, for years nobody expected the Iron Curtain to fall, and for years everybody said when it does fall, it'll be a terrific triumph for the church. I mean, you know, religion will come back. And Cardinal Koenig always spent his time saying that was an over-expectation. Things don't work like that. Down on the actual working plane, it's a lot of hard work, and we must listen to them and to their problems and stop going in there and preaching at them and saying this is what you've got to do. Whether this has got better, I think it has. Cardinal Vuk of Prague, I think the Cardinal did a lot, Cardinal Koenig, to speak to Cardinal Erdő in Budapest, Cardinal Vuk. He had many friends among the Orthodox, was highly respected by the patriarchs, even the Russian patriarch went to Moscow and so on. He was seen as a real mediator with the churches of the East, not only the Uniates and the Latin Rite, but also the Orthodox. So I think that there are still a lot of churchmen who highly respect him. I think Cardinal Schönborn is carrying it on to a certain extent. He's very good. He's been to Romania and Bulgaria and Russia and so on. But I think that altogether, ecumenism at the moment, which involves Eastern Europe, is at a low ebb. I mean, it seems to be rather flat.
That was tablet correspondent in Austria, Christa Pongratz-Lipiet, sharing with us her memories of the legendary Austrian Cardinal Franz Koenig. But at this point, why not hear more about the Austrian Church today? By listening to a parish priest in Vienna's second district, his name is Father Konstantin Spiegelfeld, and he was extremely busy at the time of the Pope's visit, so I spoke to him over the phone. I asked Father Konstantin for a little bit of historical background first.
For many centuries, we had a very strong alliance between state and church. And Joseph II, for instance, who lived 200 years ago, installed what we can call some kind of state church. Yeah? But last century, we had strong turbulences, we could say. Yeah? On the one hand, the Socialist Party decided, as Otto Bauer faces only a matter of privacy, and only Caritas should be mentioned and supported in the public. And on the other hand, there was a priest who was also prime minister. His name was Seipel, and he had a very, very strong connection to one political party, the People's Party. And so, as a result, the church came in a situation where there were very strong tensions and even fights between people. Huh? After World War II and after the Second Vatican Council was obviously a very prosperous time, both for the society and churches, and also for the Catholic Church. All people wanted to build up the society and the church again. And the church proclaimed under Cardinal König a free church in a free state. So that was a very prosperous time for us. But in the 80s, there was a strong incision or cut, we could say. On the one hand, in the whole society, but also in the church. Our Cardinal Grohe, this time wanted a very strong spiritual renewal, we could say, of the church. And he worked very hard for it. I, for myself, was even ordained by him. But there were growing tensions because some bishops, priests, lay people said, we do not have the right structures in the church. We must change the structures, and then we can cope with the challenges of today's world. And in this time, also communication of church with the public was very bad. Then Cardinal Grohe had to dismiss, and after this, there came Cardinal Schönborn, who is now in charge, I think, for 11 years or 12 years.
Church recently, the media has picked up on this, has had some troubled times. How has it moved on from there? You yourself are a parish priest. I gather that the heart of change, of renewal, is within the parish.
Yes, because also not only the church is changing, but also the society is changing. Some people are very mobile today. They move from one place to the other. Some people live really on one place, sometimes for the whole life. And the parish is a structure where you have to cope with all the challenges of today's life. On the one hand side, with the people who stay in a constant manner in one place, but also with the other people who are moving, and if the family situation is not optimal and they get divorced, then they move to another place. And how do they get to know then the church, and how do they get to know the community of the church, the contents of our faith?
Can you tell me about some of the initiatives that have taken place at a parish level?
Yes, well, we ourselves participated in the so-called Stadtmission. There was a big Stadtmission.
An urban mission.
An urban mission. Stadt means urban, yes. City mission. 4 years ago, there was in the whole town urban mission. But we had in our parish also 6 years ago so-called parish mission to find new ways to communicate our faith. And I think today there are two main challenges for us. The one challenge is the challenge of spirituality. We have inquiries that there's a growing demand for spirituality and for faith in a relative general way. And the question for us is, and for the whole diocese, is can we give a right answer? Do we have places and people who help people to find an answer in a Christian way? Is God a personal God and the God of history? Or is it only not an historical God, a very general God? Is it possible that people learn to pray, or that people are learning what it means to believe today, in today's life? Is it a God who is also alive today and has a meaning and an influence of today's life? And the second big challenge, I think, is what does it mean to live as Christian in today's world?
It's a very secular world, isn't it?
Not only secular. We live here in a parish where you have many Jews. We have many Muslims who are living here. We have a lot of Buddhists, or at least people who like this way of meditation in a Buddhist way, like to have yoga and so on. And so it's not only the secular world, but also other religions here. Huh?
You have, within your parish, in other words, you have a good relationship with these other religions.
Yes, opposed to Jews, we have relatively good relationships. But it's not always easy. There are very orthodox Jews and very liberal Jews. Huh? So it's a bright range, a wide range. Huh? And also with the Muslims, they were opposite of our church. There are Muslims who are very political Muslims. Huh? And it's not so easy to get touch with them. Huh? And they are very radical, yes, in some manner. Huh? So in our district, religion is some kind of topic. Huh? You see Muslim wives who are very visible, and you see Jews who are very visible. Huh? And it's a question, do you see the Christians who are visible in some way? Yeah? We have to learn to spell our faith again, yeah? Also the young generation, that God is not only a very general person, yeah? But it's also really concrete personal relationship possible. Yeah? I think the main topic is then, is it about the dignity of man today? Yeah? Dignity of man, beginning of life, in work life, and naturally the dignity of the elder persons is very important. Yeah? And also of the children. Who has time to educate children? We have a strong discussion in Austria, schools who wants to open the whole day, kindergarten who wants to take the children with 1 year or half a year. Yeah? Who has time to educate young people? Yeah? Does anybody have time for them? And it's a very critical situation, I think. Yeah?
Apart from the family level, there are not a lot of priests at the parish level, are there? I mean, in Vienna perhaps there are priests, but I think there's a lack of priests in Austria, no?
Yeah, we're in a lucky situation because a lot of priests are coming to Vienna to study here. Either from Africa and from other parts of the world. Huh? And so we have not a dramatic situation, I think. Huh? A lot of lay people are helping in the parishes. Huh? We call them Pfarrgemeinderäte, the council of the parish. Huh? And they are elected by the parish people. Huh? It takes a strong role. And then they are also specially invited to come to Mariazell, for instance. Huh? So it's very important. Huh?
I've heard of the so-called apostolate of today. What is it exactly?
The apostolate of today. So we have three big initiatives, I think, in Vienna. We have on several parish churches also in St. Stephen's Cathedral, but also in our church, what we call an evening of mercy. Yeah? Churches are not only open, but people are being invited on the street to come into church. There's a solemn adoration. Often the altar is decorated in a special way. It is possible to draw a sentence of the Holy Scripture, to write down thanksgiving or requests, and there's a possibility of common prayer for personal talk and conversation. In our church, also the sacrament of reconciliation. Yeah? That's in many churches now in Vienna, in our church also, every Wednesday, for instance, from 5 to 7 p.m., and then it ends up with a Holy Mass. Then we have a big initiative that we call the Lange Nacht der Kirchen, a long night of the churches. 100 churches are open one night in June, it's usually 6 p.m. till 12 p.m., and people are invited to come into church. There are special programs, special prayers. Churches can be visited, and they get to know their own churches. This year, I think, more than 100,000 people participated on this big event, we could say. Yeah? Mm. And they get to know believing people, priests, different Christian communities. And then we start something what we call update, the way to communicate and explain, like a catechesis, the contents and meaning of Christian Catholic faith to people. Encourage people to live their faith in public. Yeah? It's also with discussions in the church. Yeah? I saw this once in Cairo, how the Coptic church does it. Yeah? It's very interesting, and we try to find ways to communicate.
Now, moving on in the broadcast, why don't you join me as I go over to a Cistercian abbey, that of Heiligenkreuz, the most vibrant at present in Austria with its high number of vocations and the oldest Cistercian monastery, where monks have been working and praying without interruption for well over 8.5 centuries, where in February this year a 200-year-old academy turned pontifical, and indeed where Pope Benedict XVI went on Sunday, 9th of September. I went there prior to his visit and spoke to the rector of this institution, Father Karl Wallner. I did so, as you'll discover in a moment, inside the church. It definitely had the right acoustics. Let's listen.
It was founded in 1802, and it has continued to exist through the centuries, and now we have a big development, because the Holy Father has made our Hochschule, our School of Theology, to be a faculty of theology, un Ateneo Pontificio. And our Father Abbot has given to our faculty the name of Benedict XVI. So it's called Philosophical Theological Faculty Benedict XVI Heiligenkreuz.
It's a breakthrough, this, for Austria, isn't it?
I think it's a very important thing, not only for us here in our monastery and our faculty, but for Austria too, because this Holy Father, this Pope, who is so fit in theology, he really gives us the fundamentals that we need for the future of church and for the future of Christianity.
He chose to come here, right?
He has chosen it himself because he knows that. Who knows us, and he appreciates us very much, I think. But we will not become proud because of this, because we know we are only one very small part of the rich life of church in Austria. And I think also this visit to Heiligenkreuz, to this monastery, is the visit also to all the other big old monasteries with such a big spiritual tradition in Austria.
That was the rector of the Heiligenkreuz Pontifical Academy, Father Karl Wallner. By the way, this abbey just west of Vienna is located on the sacred way to the Marian Shrine at Mariazell, where Pope Benedict went on Saturday, 8th of September, on the Feast of Our Lady's birthday, precisely to mark 8.5 centuries since it was first founded. A place of pilgrimage at a crossroads between Eastern and Western Europe. As Austria's National Director of the Pontifical Missionary Societies, Father Leo Masberg, personally witnessed when he went there on pilgrimage himself.
Studying in Melk, which is a Benedictine monastery not too far from Vienna and not too far from Mariazell. So when we had real difficult exams, we promised that we would make pilgrimages to Mariazell, which actually once I did. But it took me 3 days to get there, and it rained, it poured rain all 3 days. So when I reached there, I was so happy that I was there. I stayed only a few minutes in the church, so having fulfilled my vote, and I walked back, and I went back by train. Then there's a small, beautiful train. When the weather is nice, you have a wonderful trip into those mountains and into Mariazell, and probably it's a beautiful shrine if you do it individually. I did it for the Middle European Catholic Day, which was 2 years ago, and we had pouring rain, and we had real cold and snow, rain and snow, but the atmosphere was wonderful. They came from all sides, from all former Austro-Hungarian countries, and you found people speaking Slovak, Ukrainian, Russian, Romanian, everything there. The atmosphere was wonderful, but the dirt was amazing.
Why?
Because it poured rain for 3 days, and you had about 2 inches of mud on the floor.
So, were they? Would you describe them as simple people? What kind of people were these pilgrims? Did they come on foot, any of them?
All kind of people. For them, it was probably a sign that now they are free again. They can follow their old traditions, and their parents and grandparents, they had that tradition to come to Mariazell on pilgrimage. So they came, and young people from there came, but they came, for example, dressed with T-shirts, but it was almost down to zero. It was snowing. So it was a real disaster for them because the weather had changed so quickly. And those who stayed, there were several thousand staying for the final mass. There was a special mass for the young people the next day, and those who stayed started mass in pouring rain. And when the offertory came, suddenly the heavens opened up, and the sun shone down. And after consecration, it closed up again, and after the blessing of Mass, it started raining. And the cardinal called it the sun miracle of Mariazell, because it was so obvious that it came out only for the consecration and then disappeared again afterwards. So
Relating to the Fatima sun miracle.
And for the young people, it was amazing. I think they took back a real experience, which they probably interpreted as a miracle for themselves.
That was Austria's National Director of the Pontifical Missionary Societies, Father Leo Mansberg, sharing with us his personal experience of Mariazell. And that brings us up to time. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.